Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
60 years ago today, Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. gave his historic I Have a Dream speech at the 1963 March on Washington. On Saturday, thousands gathered in Washington to mark the anniversary, but the day was marred by news that a white supremacist gunman had shot dead three black people at a dollar store in Jacksonville, Florida.
This is a dark day in Jacksonville's history. Any loss of life is tragic, but the hate that motivated the shooter's killing spree adds an additional layer of heartbreak.
Speak to the prize-winning journalist Gary Young about racism in America, gun violence, and the 60th anniversary of the March on Washington. Then the city of White Plains, New York, has agreed to a $5 million settlement with the family of Kenneth Chamberlain, a black 68-year-old former Marine shot dead by police in his own apartment after they came to him for a wellness check when he accidentally triggered his medical alert pendant. We'll speak to his son, Ken Chamberlain Jr.
I think that people are now coming together and they're saying that extrajudicial killings and summary executions of unarmed black men, women, and children is no longer going to be tolerated. I mean, what we have been witnessing for decades are crimes against humanity.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Jacksonville, Florida, gunmen shot and killed three black people Saturday in a racist attack, which the U.S. Justice Department's investigating as a hate crime. The three victims, who were killed in front of and inside a dollar store, were identified as 52-year-old Angela Michelle Carr, 19-year-old Anult Joseph, known as A.J. Laguerre Jr., and 29-year-old Gerald Deshaun Gallion. The shooter was identified as Ryan Palmiter, a 21-year-old white man who died by suicide after his rampage. This is Jacksonville Sheriff T.K. Waters.
The shooter had authored several manifestos, one to his parents, one to the media, and one to federal agents. Portions of these manifestos detailed the shooter's disgusting ideology of hate. Plainly put, this shooting was racially motivated, and he hated black people.
The gunman had no criminal history and legally purchased the two weapons he used earlier this year, a Glock handgun and an AR-15-style rifle. The guns had swastikas drawn on them. Before the attack, the shooter was seen at Edward Waters University, a historically black college. He drove away after a security guard turned him back. On Sunday, Governor Ron DeSantis spoke at a vigil where he was booed by crowds. One attendee shouted, "Your policies caused this." Florida Governor DeSantis and Florida Republicans have imposed racist laws, including rolling back diversity and inclusion policies and attacking African American studies. DeSantis also opposes gun law reform. As the massacre in Jacksonville was unfolding in Washington, D.C., thousands of people gathered for the 60th anniversary of the March on Washington, where Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his I Have a Dream speech. Gregory Jackson of the Community Justice Action Fund addressed gun violence in his speech.
Every year, over 138,000 people are killed from this crisis. This is the number one cause of death for all youth in America. The number one cause of death for all black men in America. The number two cause of death for all black women and all Latino men in America. But yet we have not seen the action to deal with the biggest health crisis of our time. In the past 30 years, we have only seen one law passed to address gun violence. One law. And yet, Our bodies are laying on the pavement every day. Every 8 minutes, another life is lost.
In Zimbabwe, President Emmerson Mnangagwa was declared the winner of last week's election, securing another five-year term after a delay in polls and accusations of a rigged election. European election observers said the vote fell short of established standards, noting, quote, acts of violence and intimidation resulted ultimately in a climate of fear, unquote. Zimbabwean opposition leader Nelson Chamisa called the election a gigantic fraud and asked neighboring countries to intervene.
It is clear that we are rejecting the election is a sham, the result. The process itself, we disregard it, and it's in line with what the SADC observers have said. We reject this sham result and flawed process based on the disputed figures.
The Western African nation of Gabon shut down internet access and imposed a curfew following its national election Saturday amidst voting delays and as opposition leader Albert Ando Ossa denounced fraud in his challenge against incumbent President Ali Bongo Ondimba. Bongo has already served 2 7-year terms. His family's been in power for over half a century. Critics accuse Bongo of not using Gabon's oil wealth to improve the lives of one-third the population living in poverty. In Niger, military coup leaders ordered armed forces on maximum alert as they warned of a heightened threat of attacks by ECOWAS troops. The West African bloc has readied their forces to intervene if a diplomatic resolution to the coup is not reached. Meanwhile, Niger's junta ordered the French ambassador to leave the country. Demonstrators rallied Friday to show support for the military rulers 1 month after the July 26 coup.
We're not in the 18th century where someone has to impose or dictate to us what we should do. No, this is about our independence, and I believe that if the CNSP takes a decision, it must be respected. France must realize that this is no longer the colonial era. Today, we're in the 21st century, and France must learn to respect our ideals if it wants things to move forward together.
In Haiti, at least 7 people were killed after gang members armed with machine guns opened fire on protesters in Canaan Sunday. The rally against gang violence had been organized by a local church. Canaan is a makeshift town near the capital, Port-au-Prince, built by people who lost their homes in Haiti's devastating 2010 earthquake. Survivors of Sunday's attack also placed blame on the pastor who organized the rally, then continued the march even as the shooting broke out.
They opened fire on us with all sorts of guns. The pastor's followers really believed what he told them. He said they were bulletproof, that those who were wounded had no faith. I was there. I saw everything with my own eyes. They were firing and the pastor was walking.
Hundreds of thousands of Haitians have been internally displaced or forced to migrate due to worsening violence. The UN reported some 8,700 residents have been forced to take shelter in a crowded sports center in Port-au-Prince. Russian authorities say genetic analysis has confirmed Wagner Group chief Yevgeny Prigozhin died in last Wednesday's plane crash, along with some of Wagner's top officials. The Kremlin has denied responsibility for the crash, which happened just 2 months after Prigozhin led an aborted mutiny against Russia's military, and President Vladimir Putin vowed to punish the act. In Guatemala, a former military colonel has been convicted of crimes against humanity for his involvement in the killing of over 24 indigenous people in 1982. Juan Ovalle Salazar was sentenced to 20 years in prison. The massacre of 25 Maya Achi people, most of them children, took place during some of the bloodiest years of Guatemala's U.S.-funded war and came under the ruling of U.S.-backed military dictator Efrain Rios Montt. 8 former members of the Guatemalan Armed Forces were acquitted, rights activists continue to demand justice.
We want those responsible for the massacre of our brothers in Rancho Bejuco and Baja Verapaz to be sentenced by the judges. As we have always said, as long as there is no justice in Guatemala, peace cannot be built.
Rios Montt was convicted of genocide in a historic 2013 trial. That ruling was later overturned by a higher court. In related news, a judge in Guatemala City has granted former President Otto Pérez Molina's request to be released from prison and be placed on house arrest. The former president first has to pay several fines totaling about $1.3 million. He was forced to resign following historic nationwide protests in 2015, convicted of corruption and running a multi-million $1 million bribe scheme. He was sentenced to 16 years in prison in 2022. Pérez Molina served as a regional commander under Rios Montt using a different name. Back in the U.S., a Texas ban on gender-affirming care for youth is set to go into effect this week on Friday, despite an injunction issued last week against the ban. The Travis County judge said in her Friday ruling the law would cause patients and providers to, quote, suffer probable, imminent, and irreparable injury, unquote. But Texas's attorney general immediately appealed, staying the decision. Meanwhile, a Missouri judge allowed a ban on gender-affirming care for minors and some adults to take effect starting today. The law is currently being challenged by rights groups on behalf of doctors, groups serving the trans community and affected families. In Georgia, a federal judge in Atlanta is hearing arguments today from the legal team of Donald Trump's former chief of staff, Mark Meadows, as he attempts to move his charges to federal court, where Meadows could claim immunity due to his position in government at the time of the offenses. The outcome could have major implications for Trump and other co-defendants in Fulton County's racketeering indictment over Trump and his allies' attempts to overturn his 2020 election loss. All 19 defendants have now surrendered. Fulton County DA Fani Willis is expected to set up her case against the co-conspirators during today's arguments. Separately, a trial date is expected to be announced today in Trump's federal election interference case. Trump's lawyers are attempting to postpone his trial until 2026, while federal prosecutors have proposed a January start date. The European Union's sweeping new rules on large tech companies kicked in Friday as lawmakers seek to rein in harmful and illegal content and digital monopolies. The new legislation regulates social media, targeted advertising, user privacy policies, and fake or illicit products from e-commerce sites. Among the affected companies are Amazon, Apple, Google, Meta, Microsoft, Snapchat, and TikTok. Violations could lead to billions of dollars in fines. And here in the United States, Donald Trump made his return to X, formerly known as Twitter, Thursday with a fundraising post featuring his mugshot. Trump had been banned from Twitter following the January 6th insurrection, but that ban was lifted after Elon Musk purchased Twitter. Earlier this month, the rights groups and users of X sounded the alarm after reports that paying subscribers to the platform will have to send their ID and a selfie for verification to an Israeli software company. The firm, Autentix, was founded by former Israeli intelligence officers and has been implicated in Israel's surveillance of Palestinians. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. Coming up, we talk with the prize-winning journalist Gary Young about Saturday's racially motivated shooting in Jacksonville and the 60th anniversary of the March on Washington. Stay with us.
Tell me how we got over lost. My soul look back and wonder how did we make it over. Tell me how we got over, Lord. I've been falling and rising all these years, but you know my soul look back and wonder how did I make it over. But soon as I can see Jesus, the man that died for me, then that bled and suffered. And he hoped.
How I Got Over, performed by Mahalia Jackson at the original March on Washington in 1963. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Yes, 60 years ago today, the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. gave his historic I Have a Dream speech at the 1963 March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. On Saturday, thousands gathered in D.C. to mark the anniversary, but the day was marred by news that a white supremacist gunman shot dead three black people at a store in Jacksonville, Florida. Authorities say the gunman initially tried to enter the historically black college, Edward Waters University, but he was turned away by a security guard. The gunman then drove to a Dollar General store where he shot dead 52-year-old Angela Michelle Carr, 19-year-old A.J. Laguerre Jr., and 29-year-old Gerald Deshaun Gallion. The gunman was armed with a Glock handgun and an AR-15-style rifle, which had a swastika drawn in it. Authorities said the gunman purchased the guns legally, even though he'd been involuntarily held for a mental health examination in 2017. The gunman later fatally shot himself. The Justice Department's investigating the shooting as a hate crime. Police said the shooter had written racist manifestos prior to the shooting. President Biden said in a statement, quote, "We must say clearly and forcefully that white supremacy has no place in America." This is Jacksonville Sheriff T.K. Waters.
The weapons that the shooter used today are a Glock and an AR-15 style rifle. This is a dark day in Jacksonville's history. Any loss of life is tragic, but the hate that motivated the shooter's killing spree adds an additional layer of heartbreak. There's no place for hate in our community, and this is not Jacksonville.
Jacksonville Sheriff T.K. Waters. We're joined now by Gary Young, prize-winning journalist, professor of sociology at the University of Manchester, author of several books, including The Speech, the story behind Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream, which was just updated with a new introduction for this 60th anniversary of that historic day in Washington. Gary Young's most recent book is Dispatches from the Diaspora, from Nelson Mandela to Black Lives Matter, just about to be published. He's also author of Another Day in the Death of America. Young worked for The Guardian for 26 years, including 12 years as a U.S. correspondent. Gary, welcome back to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us. Before we move on to the 60th anniversary of that famous March on Washington and Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech, if you can respond to what happened at just about the same time as the anniversary rally in Washington on Saturday in Jacksonville. Talk about the white supremacist gunman using guns that he had legally gotten, even though he had been involuntarily evaluated for mental health issues in 2017. He had that Glock and an AR-15.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, Ian. Good morning to you. A few things really come to mind. And the first is that in a range of ways, America has all the same problems that the rest of, certainly Western Europe has in terms of racism. I'm talking to you from Italy, which has a fascist government. It has inequality. It has people with mental health problems. It has racism. The thing that it also has, which none of these other places have, and easy access to weapons, which can be weapons of significant destruction, as in firearms. And that makes everything in America more lethal. It makes its racism more lethal, its domestic violence more lethal, any kind of social dispute or interaction more lethal. It makes suicide more lethal, because if you really want to commit suicide, a gun will do it very much more effectively than anything else, and then you don't have the chance to change your mind. So in a range of ways, we see this more lethal manifestation of racism. The second thing that I think is that this hate from this young man did not come from nowhere. There was a context. I think it's a stretch to say a cause that he has been listening to Trump or been listening to DeSantis and therefore went out and murdered Black people. But certainly a context, a clear context in which this mass shooting took place. If you are surrounded by the kind of hate, the kind of hateful speech, the kind of political machinations, the banning of books, the suppression of elections, the decision that some people's votes don't matter, that really vicious political culture and racist political culture that has become embedded at the heart of American politics, then that has an effect. It's supposed to have an effect. And this is one of the offshoots of that effect. There's always been hate crimes in America, but there's been a significant increase in those in the number of hate crimes, and particularly in anti-Black hate crimes. And one has to be able to connect that to the political situation that surrounds us. The final thing I would say is that it is consistent. There have been, particularly since George Floyd's murder, there's been a rise in anti-racist consciousness. There's been an increase in capacity in anti-racist work and in anti-racist and a spread of anti-racist thinking. And just like with the March on Washington, where within about a month, I think, they had firebombed the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham and killed four little girls and injured many as they were on their way back from, as on a break from Sunday school, that we see the backlash, this violent, desperate, and ultimately kind of defeated lashing out of a section of the racist community. And so it is consistent in a range of ways. And it should shift our understanding when there is this notion of the King's Dream speech as being folded into America's liberal mythology. America's always getting better. It's always getting more wonderful. It's always, and in a range of ways, it isn't. And this should be a corrective to any kind of happy talk that there might be around that 60th anniversary that doesn't take into account the realities of now and the fact that as things can go forwards, so can they go backwards.
So let's be very clear about that March on Washington. In fact, it was on August 28th, 1963, which was observing the anniversary of the death of Emmett Till, right? A 14-year-old boy who was killed, lynched by whites, taken from his uncle's home in the middle of the night in Money, Mississippi.
That's right. It took place honoring that anniversary and evoking a range of violent acts that had taken place throughout the decade or so prior, but that had also seen a huge swelling of resistance that said, you know, not that African Americans ever just accepted that lot, but the organization and the level of resistance had been ramped up in that decade since, also since Till's murder, and that in some ways the March on Washington was a symbolic kind of crescendo to that period of resistance.
So I want to go from Jacksonville to the 60th anniversary of the 63 March on Washington. People often don't realize its official title was the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. These were the words of the Reverend Martin Luther King 60 years ago today.
I have a dream that one day, this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. Yeah. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners, will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood?
That was Reverend Martin Luther King 60 years ago. Okay. Well, on Saturday, thousands gathered in Washington, D.C. to mark this 60th anniversary. Organizers included the Reverend Al Sharpton of the National Action Network.
60 years ago, Martin Luther King talked about a dream. 60 years later, we're the dreamers. The problem is we're facing the schemers. It's the streamers on one side, the schemers on the other. The dreamers are fighting for voting rights. The schemers are changing voter regulations in states. The dreamers are standing up for women's right to choose. The schemers are arguing whether they're going to make you stop at 6 weeks or 15 weeks. The dreamers are saying that if you're LGBTQ or trans, you have a right to your life. The schemers are saying we're going to make you look like you're something that should not be tolerated in human society. It's the dreamers against the schemers. The dreamers are in Washington, D.C. The schemers are being booked in Atlanta, Georgia, in the Fulton County Jail. The dreamers will win. The dreamers will march. The dreamers will stand up. Black, white, Jewish, LGBTQ. We are the dreamers. We're the children of the dream.
That's Al Sharpton on the 60th anniversary of the March on Washington. But let's go back to the original 1963 march and that famous speech, the one you, Gary Young, wrote a book about, the speech, the story behind Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream. We chose that clip of the dream because, in fact, it wasn't going to be in this speech. Is that right? Talk about his close ally, the person who was with him the night before. He was with a group of his allies talking about what he should say, the Reverend Wyatt Walker.
Well, that's right. The Reverend Wyatt Walker had said to King, because the dream sequence have been used in several speeches previously. Best heard, I think, in Detroit not long before. And Wyatt Walker said to him, "Don't use the dream bit. It's, you know, you've done it over and over again. It's hackneyed. It's tired. Do something new."
And let's talk about this, Gary, that, I mean, you write about this so eloquently in the speech. He had just talked about it at addressing the, Insurance Association of America, and before that, a few weeks before Detroit.
That's right. Before insurers in Chicago. And, King had given a lot of speeches during that time, but you have to remember, lots of people didn't have television, and so this was his chance to speak both to America and to the world. Unless you're in the movement or you're African-American and active in the church, you maybe probably hadn't heard him speak. So this was his chance. And he was worried that it was going to sound too hackneyed, too trite. That's what Wyatt Walker said. It's trite. And so if you listen to the speech, he is actually winding down. And he used to say when he was speaking, it was like looking for a place to land. Like he was a pilot looking for a place to land. And you can hear him saying, go back to Mississippi, go back to Alabama. He's looking for a place to land. And it's Mahalia Jackson, whose voice we heard right at the beginning, who was at the Detroit March, who says, tell him about the dream, man. Tell him about the dream. And Clarence Jones, who had written the first draft of the draft that was printed of the speech, but doesn't have the dream in it, he saw King in his body shift from a politician to a preacher. And he turned to the person next to him and said, these people don't know, but they're about to go to church. And then King starts on his dream on his dream sequence, which becomes the thing that is best known about, it's called the dream speech for a reason.
And Gary Young, let's talk about another addition that he was warned. No, you've said this before. Don't say it again. I want to play the clip of Dr. King talking about the bad check.
In a sense, we've come to